being out last week. I thank Todd for filling in for the class material. But with that, I didn't get the materials out there copied for you in time, but I think there's the first three lessons out there, maybe four, and I'll continue to get those out there. There are a lot of interesting aspects of the Gospel of Matthew beyond just the inspired word. What we want to do as an introduction this morning is kind of look at some of these unique aspects of Matthew, answer some of the basic questions, and then kind of set the stage for why Matthew 1:1 kind of, you know, starts the way it does. There's a purpose behind that. But first, I hope this is not an unsettling way to start this. Who wrote the book of Matthew? Well, maybe. Let me put it this way. Does the Gospel of Matthew, as we have it, does it proclaim any authorship? No. Now, does that bother you any?
Well, it didn't bother the people that approved it.
Yeah. Well, then let me ask you this way. How many Gospels do we have? Four Gospels, three Synoptic and John. So Matthew doesn't tell us specifically who the author is. What about Mark? Hint, same answer. No. What about Luke? No. John? No. So, if it's a problem, it's a recurring problem. But as Bill pointed out a moment ago, as the canon was being put together, and that's a totally different subject for a different time, just realize that there are internal suggestions, there is tradition, and you know, as early as the second century, early in the second century, the manuscripts for Matthew were attributed to people that still would have kind of bridged that gap as being from Matthew. Okay. Now, the next kind of basic question, which Matthew? I mean, I'm guessing there is more than one Matthew in the world at this time.
It would be an apostle.
The apostle Matthew is the evidence that's put forward there. And we'll kind of come back and pick up some of these bits and pieces as we go. What do you know about Matthew the Apostle?
Tax collector.
Tax collector. Okay. First century tax collector. At the time all of these things were transpiring that he writes about, who would have been his boss? Big picture. Who would have been his boss? Where does that put him in the hierarchy of the Jewish nation?
Unpopular.
Very unpopular.
About the great emperor.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the same.
Yeah. Very unpopular. We see these phrases time and time again, and we even talked about some in the Bible study Saturday morning with the men's Bible class. He eats with tax collectors and sinners. you kind of tag those two together. You know, there are reasons that tax collectors had a bad name. You know, first, they were working for the enemy, Rome. And secondly, there were many wicked tax collectors. If you owed them 100 denarii, if they could collect 105, the five went in their pocket. You know, so many used it to get a lot of wealth. This is something I really never thought of before until we started getting into this. Beyond the Gospel of Matthew, what do we know about Matthew? After Christ died, he's an apostle. What do we know about Matthew? And I'll even make it easier. What do we read about Matthew in the book of Acts, for instance? Anything? No. Yeah, nothing specifically mentioned. So after we get past Acts and then we start picking up with the general epistles, do we have an epistle other than the gospel here? Do we have any epistles written by Matthew?
Unless he wrote Hebrews.
Yeah. It's here.
We can surmise that he was probably in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, probably in the Jerusalem Council in Acts chapter 15, but not directly mentioned.
No.
Yeah.
After the death of Jesus, it was given before, but after the death of Jesus and his resurrection and ascension, what was the purpose, goal, directive given to specifically the apostles, generally to us as well?
Spread the gospel.
To where? Everywhere, okay? This is not inspired that we have, but there are many well-founded early traditions about Matthew that in his work, he went to Africa and specifically was working in Ethiopia and did not have a real good relationship, if you will, with the king of Ethiopia, and made mention of the king's lack of morals, and was executed by the king because of that. The tradition is all of the apostles, with the exception of John, were martyrs. And the tradition is that's how Matthew met his end. It's not important if that's true or not, but it also shows us that the apostles were, kind of doing what they were supposed to do. And that little tradition that's there kind of reminded me of a forerunner of Jesus that got in trouble for telling a ruler he didn't have good morals. Who would that have been? John the Baptist. It's unlawful for you to have the wife. Let's fix that.
But maybe, as you point out, it's not critical.
I found it interesting that when they're talking about their traditions, and I can see this happening, but I can also see it being made up as an explanation for, I bet this is what happened. But there's a tradition that the apostles kind of cast lots to see where they were going to go. I don't know how they made that decision, but I just thought that was interesting that man comes up with that kind of stuff. Continuing with the tradition about what happened with Matthew, two popular traditions come forward about his death. One was that because he's speaking out against the king and his morals, there's an uprising that just the people of the kingdom impaled him on spears and then had him beheaded. The other tradition is the king actually sent someone to take care of him, and he was killed in that manner. Again, those aren't necessary for us, but it's interesting when we look at it. I know you didn't have the benefit of reading this, but let's look at how Matthew, the apostle Matthew, got called. Let's look for, stay in Matthew, and let's turn to Matthew chapter 9. And somebody read 9 through 11. Now let's look at Mark chapter. Keep that in mind. Look at Mark chapter 2. Well, I know Mark's right here. Mark 2:13 through 16. And just FYI, the Levite there is also, we know from other places, the same as Matthew. There's even a lot of controversy as to why he's called Levi versus Matthew in some places. You know, when he became an apostle, did he take another name? Did people call him Levi, like maybe his first name, but he liked his middle name, Matthew, better? It really doesn't matter, but those are the same two people. And then let's look at Luke chapter 5. Luke 5:27-30, someone. Now, the commonality between those, how was Matthew, how did Matthew become an apostle?
Chosen by Christ.
Okay.
Period.
And I think it's Luke's account said, you know, he left all and followed him then. It is, I think it is telling that Jesus himself chose a tax collector to be one of his apostles. You find anything significant in that, Alan?
Benefits, even as you see verse 29, is that he knew a lot of people. And so
The scribes and Pharisees, what was their complaint that we saw over and over about Jesus?
He hangs
out with the tax collectors and the sinners. You know, this guy can't be for real. We didn't read some of the passages immediately following, but one of those is the context in which Jesus tells them, they're the folks that need me. As a despised tax collector that Matthew was, that, you know, either some people would not have liked him thinking, even if he was not, that he's crooked, and some people he's working for the enemy, that kind of gives him a different audience, different group of friends, a different group of influence than the scribes and the Pharisees might have had. Because when he throws the party at his house, who's there? You know, other tax collectors, other people of that nature, that may have never had the opportunity to be introduced to Jesus before. They might have felt they never had that audience. And I just think that that's kind of, there's a lot of unique qualities of most of the apostles that are chosen. You know, if I was going to try to put together a group of men to evangelize the world, I'm not sure that my first several choices would have been, you know, kind of uneducated fishermen, Galileans. But Christ knew the capabilities of Matthew, what's inside, what he can do. And it Alan mentioned, I think it's kind of neat that we don't pass over that apparently Matthew was kind of excited about this. You know, his initial response, or very early response, let's have a dinner. You know, let's invite people over. So that was kind of nice about that too.
Yeah, it didn't say what do I have to do.
Yeah.
He didn't tell us that, but obviously that question was asked and answered.
You know, if somebody just came up to you, Sam, follow me, come on. My initial inclination would not be, okay, let's go, you know. It's like, where are we going? What are we doing?
Most people, they're like, I gotta go take care of this, and I never recommend you for later.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you know, what do you want from me? You know? God knows the inner man. Bill.
You would think that Christ also was able to answer those questions in his mind before being asked.
Yeah. I just want the observation to be made as we're starting into this. Yes, Matthew was an apostle. Yes, Matthew was inspired by God as he wrote things. But that's not where he started. You know, he's a common guy. I use that very loosely. That has a different circle of influence. That has certain capabilities that God recognizes and wants to put to use. In the context, we kind of got, let's see where Matthew kind of fits in here. When was Matthew written, the Gospel of Matthew, as best we know?
Between 50 and 64.
Yeah, it's, there are three schools of thought. One is really that Matthew didn't exist for a long time, so we're going to put that one by the wayside. The other two schools of thought is, you know, we're in 50, 60, 64, 65, somewhere in that area, and some as late as 84 AD. But still, first century, somewhat contemporary in time. And it's put together for a reason. And I'm trying to find where this is in the book or if it's something else that I read. If it's in here and you see it, let me know. But what I remember is some people call Matthew the Old Testament Gospel. Any idea what that might mean? Okay. There we go. One thing that escaped my highlighter, and then I couldn't find it again. What's meant by the Old Testament Gospel?
He was more willing to teach Jews about the genealogy of the beginning of Christ, how it grew, which is in the Old Testament, which is part of the Jewish tradition.
Yeah. If you've had the benefit of this or another study, who was Matthew primarily writing to, as from what we can surmise?
I would say to the Jews who did not want to accept him as king and Lord or God. And that's because of like over 30 Old Testament prophecies that Matthew cites throughout the gospel.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that he is definitely, his focus is on the Jewish people, probably writing many times to Jewish Christians to help them kind of filter in all of this. And it was kind of eerie when Sam said, you know, unless if Matthew wrote Hebrews. And what I've been thinking about through this is there's a lot of similarity between Matthew and Hebrews. Hebrews is trying to convince these Jewish Christians, don't go back to that old system. This is better, better, better. Hebrews, so many times, better, better, better. And Matthew is, I think, written to Jewish Christians as well to explain to them, to get them to understand, to get them to feel okay about it, that Christ is the fulfillment of all of these Old Testament prophecies. We'll see before long that the first thing that Matthew does is take the genealogy and show that Christ is capable of sitting on the throne of David. Now, I hadn't really thought about this.
I was going to say, another source I just got now on my iPad, which is a nice thing about electronics. The one that I use, that genealogy that Gene Taylor, and he said that Matthew cites about 4 Old Testament passages. That's many more than we would have liked for the movie. And it is oriented around providing this biblical case or the scriptural case for Jesus as well. An argument that's going to appeal to the Jews, you know, less so to Gentiles about all of Scripture.
And again, when I read too many sources, I can't remember which was in here and which was somewhere else. But in this first century time, when Matthew would have been composed, if you were a Jewish Christian, what necessarily flowed from that as far as your Jewish lifestyle? First thing about the synagogue, what would have happened to you in the synagogue? you're out. And remember that the Jewish culture, everything revolved around being a Jew. The synagogue, your life, the old law, you know, just basically dictated your life. And so Matthew, if our assumptions are correct, he gets to write to either Jews maybe to be converted, or more likely in my mind, Jewish Christians, that it's okay. Because Jesus is the fulfillment of all of these Old Testament things. You may have been cut off from the synagogue. You may have been cut off from some of your social life. But that's okay, because that's the fulfillment of what the prophecies are about. You've got it right. Some of these others haven't quite hit that mark yet. So that's an interesting thing. And then if that is correct, I don't know, in the canonization process, I'm not 100% sure how they selected, you know, the order of the books that would be in the New Testament, but it's really fitting that Old Testament closes and the first thing after the Old Testament is Matthew, which takes the Old Testament and kind of makes the argument and the evidence to bring you forward to Jesus. It may be happenstance, but I don't think so. I think it kind of fits that category, Todd.
Yeah, I want to take you back because of all of that. It struck me, what was the danger? I mean, Jesus just walks up to him out of the blue. Matthew's never met him before, and Matthew decides, hey, I'd like to look at this guy. I guess I'll follow him. I think that's kind of a doubtful scenario in all the cases. I think we have very abbreviated descriptions of what transpired in the Gospels. And I'm persuaded that in each of these cases, you know, there was some awareness. I mean, Matthew was aware of what was going on. This was early in Jesus' personal ministry, obviously, so it wasn't like years of exposure he could have had. He could still make a decision quickly based upon what Jesus had done to this point, but we don't have that fact.
No.
But I just don't think he walked up to him like a stranger out of the blue one day and was struck like by a bolt of lightning and decided, because it's just not, you know, it's not really kind of a rational, some way people bring to work. I think Matthew had been aware of what was going on and get locked to this, and then Jesus brought it to him and said, follow him.
Yeah. Bill.
God has a way of doing that for you without a lot other than having it done.
Yeah.
So that's the doubt that I have. Is how does it happen? But God can do it.
Yeah, and just think of how many questions we might have about some issue that the Bible just doesn't tell us. That's not the point of the writing. The writing is that whatever had gone on before, if anything, Jesus knew, I want him. And he called him and he said, okay, let's go. And he was excited about it. And we're not given all of those little details. Like, you know, if we were trying to be the complete historian, I would have tacked on to the end of every book an appendix. Let me tell you what eventually happened to Matthew. so we know. But that's not the point. We're told what we need to know to follow God's will. Let's see.
God showed that he chose a variety of people to speak for him. And that we as Christians, we have to remember that we have to
you know, if Erica was saying that, you know, God picks and chooses the people that he's going to use based on what he knows about them that we might not. Just think of some of the, you know, the Bible characters that we know just in the New Testament. If we look real hard, we might have to kind of mash a couple together, but we can see some characteristics of ourselves in some of these people. And sometimes I'm thinking about Timothy, and I think about Mark. There may have to be a change about some things. You know, you might mess up. You know, you might be a Mark and decide to leave. It's sitting for me. I'm going home, but then turned out to be such a wonderful helper. Timothy, oh, he's too young. We can't use him. Well, no, he had a great background. So there are things we can do with him. I'm looking on page number 6 of the workbook, and this is just some of the, talks about the peculiarities. That number one, Matthew's been called the Old Testament gospel. All of these references to the Old Testament. And I have to take their word for this. I'm not that scholarly to be able to pick these up, but that there's use of different types of scriptures that he's using from the Old Testament that the Jews would have been intimately familiar with. And then there's a phrase he says that keeps being used, kingdom of heaven, kingdom of God, son of David. Those would have been, you know, hot button topics for a Jew of the day. And he uses those. Number two, he talks about there are 15 parables and 20 miracles in Matthew, and says 10 of these parables and 3 miracles are unique to the book. So as we're going through the study, that's some things to, you know, kind of have your ear up about. I never really thought about that there were 20 miracles in Matthew. I have never read Matthew with the idea of categorizing the miracles that were there. I do that in the book of John because he says, I write these things that you might believe, but there are many more. Well, there's going to be some of these many more that Matthew's going to tell us about. One of the things when we stop and think about it that we will readily recognize in Matthew, even if we haven't before, this number three, that Matthew takes, I went and counted them one time, that he puts together big blocks of teaching of Jesus. He doesn't, you know, give this account, say something else, and move on to something else. You know, and it readily becomes available because you think about there's the Sermon on the Mount, many parables about the kingdom, you know, put them together. And there's a method to that format that Jewish audience gets these teachings so that they can be comfortable that Jesus really is the fulfillment of this Old Testament prophecy. This number four, it says that the word ecclesia, from where we get church, is used twice in Matthew. And it's the only gospel to make a reference to the church. That's a little unique. I hadn't thought about that as well. In number five, if we get this idea correct, that we have the Old Testament and then Matthew is going to kind of bridge that gap of taking the Old Testament and showing why Jesus is the fulfillment of that prophecy, then in Matthew I think it says 28 verse 19, is the call to go and make disciples of all nations. That kind of closes that circuit. Old Testament to the Jews, looking toward Jesus. Then Matthew comes in and shows how all of those prophecies, all of those statements point to Jesus as being the Messiah, can sit on the Davidic throne. But then it loops it back in, go teach and make disciples of all nations. So then we start to get this all-inclusiveness here. That's most of the material for the introduction. Any questions or comments, Tom?
A couple other unique things that he covers in the same material. In the early life of Jesus, which of course we know very little about, but Matthew is the only gospel that covers the vision of Joseph. The visit of the wise men is the only gospel that covers that. The flight into Egypt of Joseph and Mary and Jesus, again, only in Matthew, and the massacre of the infants ordered by Herod. So that also kind of, to me, speaks to the maybe the Jewish audience. Of course, it's relevant to all of us, but he's getting into some of these specifics. Egypt obviously had a lot of meaning in the Jewish mind because of the year of captivity.
I think the challenge for us in studying Matthew, or the challenge for me in studying Matthew, is to try to divorce from my mind all the studies that have been done of the synoptic gospels, where they try to put together all of the information, you know, together to make a cohesive story. But as you study Matthew, kind of think about that he is writing to a particular audience, more or less, of Jews and or Jewish Christians, and convincing them in that writing that this is the fulfillment. Jesus is the fulfillment of all of this Old Testament passages that you know so well. And he's qualified to be the Savior, the Messiah, and this is what his teaching is. Kind of focus on that a little bit, Alan. Let's put him to the test. You know, you Jewish Christians, you've been immersed all these years in this Old Testament. And they would have, you know, a good Jew knew their Old Testament. From, you know, the time they're little all the way up. Let's look at this stuff you've known and let's see where it goes. And it, you know, the way that all this stuff fits together, the more we study, you know, it said Paul would go into the synagogues where he knew he had an audience, and he would reason from the scriptures, talking to them about Christ. That's what Matthew's going to do. You know, he's got a particular audience that he's going to be talking to. Next week, do lesson two. Try to read ahead a couple of chapters, so if we, you know, if we get through in 30 minutes, we'll kind of move a little bit further forward. But that's all. We'll ring the second bell in a minute. We'll be done. Thanks.